At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Omar Al-Khatib, Director of Corporate Affairs and Investor Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good morning, and thank you for joining us on our third quarter conference call. On the line with us today, we have Murad Al-Khatib, President and CEO of Alliance Grain Traders, Lori Ireland, our Chief Financial Officer, and Gaytan Barasa, our Chief Operating Officer. Before we get started, I would like to remind everyone that today's call may include forward-looking statements. Such forward-looking statements are given as of the date of this call and involve certain risks and uncertainties. A number of factors and assumptions were applied in the formulation of such statements, and actual results could differ materially. This call may also include references to certain non-IFRS financial measures. For additional information with respect to forward-looking statements, factors and assumptions, as well as a reconciliation to IFRS measures, we direct you to our news release, our website, as well as our recent filings on SEDAR. With that, I'll turn things over to Murad for some comments, and then we'll go to questions. Murad?
Thanks, Omar. Key indicators of normalization needed for pulse markets around the globe continue their recovery. They appear to be more visible during this past quarter. Now, this is certainly in line with our optimism regarding the gradual recovery of our sector that we believe may impact AGT's earnings, margins, and utilization positively in the end of 2012 and the 2013 period. We have stated earlier, we believe the relative strengthening and stability of local currencies, easing of credit liquidity constraints, and lower consumption market supply of inventories are expected to drive import volumes into key consumption regions like the Indian subcontinent and Turkey and the Middle East North Africa region. Local production is reported as constrained in these regions, and estimates regarding consumption remain high. India has reported lower production as a result of their deficient monsoon rains. Turkish production has been trending lower for some time. Both of these origins act as a key supplier for their regions. Lower available local production supplies may act as a catalyst, assisting in the 2013 recovery that we are forecasting. Pulses are a nutrient-dense, non-GMO, gluten-free, high-protein, and fiber product that help to feed large numbers of the world's population. We remain firm on our view that consumption of pulses is relatively inelastic in that people cannot choose for a long-term basis to consume their protein, specifically the vegetable protein that pulses provide. They simply must consume to ensure a healthy and nutritious way of life. Supply is not constrained globally. However, and in many of the origins we operate in, like Canada, the U.S., and Australia, supply is ample. This supply, with the carry-in stocks remaining for the 2011 harvest, puts AGT in a positive supply position, even with estimated production decreases in 2013 in some origins, most notably Canada. Pulses are a rotational crop and have lagged behind cereals and oilseeds with respect to pricing increases, making it natural for farmers to continue their rotational plan and to not chase the market by pushing their rotation. We believe farmers will make their seeding decisions in the traditional April and May period before heading out to the field in North America. We believe they will continue to grow pulses. It's far too early to estimate what farmers may do in May of 2013. In the past, our opinions have been clear regarding stock levels for AGT in Canada, the U.S., and Australia. We continue to maintain that stock levels are higher than what is actually needed. In fact, a supply contraction is seen as a positive for AGT with respect to margin recovery. While demand is estimated to remain strong and export volumes appear to be normalizing, pricing pressure and generally lower prices on pulses and end-use markets has not led to the margin recovery to the extent that we believe we would see in the period. But we did make some positive progress. In the 3 months ended September 30th, 2012, we reported EBITDA of $11.5 million, revenue and other income of $210 million. Additionally, our balance sheet improvement and management initiatives have allowed us to reduce our net debt once again. Interest-bearing debt continues to come down steadily, and we've provided an improvement of $140.2 million in cash flow from operations when comparing the nine-month period of 2012 to 2011. You'll find our complete financial results notes and management discussion on SEDAR or on our website at www.alliancegrain.com. I'm going to turn things over to Lori to discuss some of the highlights from this quarter. and then I'll come back with some of my wrap-up comments. Lori?
Thanks, Brad. AGT continues to focus on the implementation of cost-cutting initiatives and continued tracking of metrics for cash flow management right down to the subsidiary level. We are pleased to see continued improvements in these areas. As I said last quarter, and I reiterate again, AGT will continue to assess synergies across our global platform to take advantage of cost savings and create additional value for our shareholders. We are also pleased to report by segments for the first time this quarter. AGT's three sales platforms are pulses and grain processing, trading and distribution, and food ingredients. As we mentioned in our financial statements and in our MD&A, the food and food ingredients segment was deemed immaterial to report separately at this time, therefore has been combined with the pulses and grain processing segment. Since we are unable to compile comparative information, we will continue to report sales by product as well at this time. We continue to see margin improvement as gross margins improved from $62.02 per ton in quarter two of 2012 to $69.72 per ton in quarter three. An adjusted gross margin improved from $70.72 per ton in quarter two to $79.16 per ton in quarter three. In addition, EBITDA margin improved from $33.57 per ton in quarter two to $44.35 per ton in quarter three. Adjusted gross profit is a new metric we have defined this quarter, and it's calculated as gross profit plus depreciation included in cost of sales. This number will allow us to be measured on a similar basis to other publicly listed comps in our industry. For the 3 months ended September 30th, 2012, adjusted gross profit was $20.5 million or 9.8% and was 12% when considering the reclassification for marketing, sales, and distribution. This compared to $26.8 million or 14.1% for the 3 months ended September 30th, 2011 and $19.5 million or 9.6% for the 3 months ended June 30th, 2012. Note that we are reclassifying these expenses for year-over-year comparisons only, and there is no change in the methodology when comparing September 2012 to June 2012. Although there is an improvement from the prior quarter, AGT is still experiencing some margin compression resulting from macroeconomic issues, credit liquidity, currency volatility, and the Eurozone crisis. Although accounts receivable increased to $178.6 million at September 30, 2012, compared to $171.5 million at December 31, 2011, and compared to $157.8 million at June 30, 2012, this is due to increased sales tons out of our North American factories, and it's not unusual for this time of year. In contrast, however, inventory levels decreased to $141.8 million at September 30, 2012, compared to $183.3 million at December 31, 2011, and compared to $143.7 million at June 30, 2012. The decrease in inventory levels is the result of a continued focus on inventory levels at each factory. This continued effort to increase and monitor inventory turns has resulted in lower inventory levels. We are pleased with the absolute reduction of inventory from year-end in the amount of $41.5 million. When looking at our below-the-line results, general and admin and marketing sales and distribution costs were $10.2 million for the quarter ended September 30, 2012. This is $1 million lower than the $11.2 million at June 30, 2012. We feel this is a result of our continuing programs aimed at cost savings initiatives. Income tax expense was $22,000, lower than the $1.8 million reported in June 2012. Income taxes are recorded at various rates in various countries, and certain jurisdictions recorded lower tax impacts due to utilization of loss carryforwards this quarter. When comparing the non-cash foreign exchange for the 9 months ended September 2012, this was a recovery of $4 million compared to an expense of $29 million for the 9 months ended September 30, 2011. This demonstrates a slow and gradual return to more stable currencies in our markets of operation. We have seen interest expense increase from the quarter ended June 30, 2012 and the quarter ended September 2011 due to interest rate increases in certain foreign subsidiary loans. AGT management continues to focus on alternative financing to lower the overall interest rate of our company. We are examining options to increase the size of our Canadian domiciled syndicated credit facilities to more cost-effectively fund some of our emerging markets operations with more interest rate certainty, longer duration, and committed credit facilities. This strategy will better manage the liquidity risk on our balance sheet and provide adequate capital to capture sales and earnings opportunities when we see the anticipated market recovery in 2013. AGT and its subsidiaries are in compliance with covenants at September 30th, 2012. Also, a dividend was paid out on October 5th, 2012, based on 60 cents per share per annum. Finally, I would like to reiterate that AGT has a clear path going forward. As Murad mentioned, we have specific goals and targets, and our subsidiaries will be held accountable for this. Thank you.
Thanks, Lori. As I've indicated in the past few quarters, we've used the recent market downturn that is continuing to show signals of recovery to our advantage by focusing on operational efficiencies and management initiatives aimed at strengthening our balance sheet and on redefining our strategy overall. In the more than 15 years I've spent in the global export sector, believe me when I say we have never seen conditions like those that we are now emerging from. These conditions are about as bad as they could get. We as a company, though, are better, stronger, and faster because of what we've been able to do in dealing with these headwinds. From this experience, we have a clear strategy and the operational means to execute on the opportunities ahead. I'd like to discuss the main points of our strategic implementation. The first, we'll continue to focus on operational efficiencies and cost management. We plan to continue our initiatives aimed at cost containment and reductions. The market slowdown in 2011 and into 2012 provided our management team with a great opportunity to look at our business costs in their entirety and implement measures to make each of our global plant managers and business unit directors accountable for costs within their areas and further measure them on their cost reduction programs and overall reductions in processing costs per metric ton. We feel that by continuing to focus on management of fixed costs, boosting utilization of AGT's asset base will indeed deliver a higher contribution to earnings per share and earnings overall. Second is perhaps the most transformational in the long term of our business. That is to work on improving margins through a combination of changes to our product mix, focusing on more value-added processing and products like split lentils, split peas, sized and color-sorted chickpeas and beans, but also new platforms for growth, such as our pulse ingredient initiatives focused on proteins, fibers, starches, and flours. Markets that we're shipping to already, such as the South America, Caribbean, and South Asian markets, already provide opportunity with a renewed focus on sales programs and products that these markets are already consuming. But new ingredient markets like North America, Europe, and Southeast Asia, including China, Malaysia, Philippines, and Indonesia, we expect can provide new opportunities we were not in a position to capitalize on previously. Our investment in our Minot, North Dakota, and Tianjin, China ingredient processing plants and in our laboratory facilities in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan are expected to create opportunities in the pet food, aquaculture, food, and industrial uses of pulse markets, as well as allow us to supply quality ingredients for food companies derived from pulses. We like the profile of pulses as ingredients, and many of our customers agree with us on this. They're nutrient-dense, non-GMO, gluten-free, high-protein, and fiber products. That is a desirable combination from the global food market. These new platforms are expected to transform AGT from a processor and shipper of agricultural commodities and agri-food products such as whole and value-added pulses, and to a supplier of ingredients critical to food companies producing branded products for retail and food service sale to consumers around the globe. And with the scale and size of operations, margin improvement on existing tons handled through AGT facilities and new margin opportunities from the ingredient platform will have a material impact on improved earnings. Thirdly, AGT management will continue its focus on increasing inventory and receivable turns to ensure that working capital debt is reduced as a percentage of revenues and as a percentage or on a ratio basis to equity capital. As AGT's business grows and earnings improve, debt optimization strategies will ensure that our company maintains a healthy balance sheet to fund its growth and expansion from free cash flow and debt while maintaining its yield to our shareholders. As well, we're working with our banking partners around the globe to leverage our healthy balance sheet to pursue strategies that increase the time and duration of our global credits and global cost of debt capital across our mix of operating geographies. Access to capital in a capital-constrained global marketplace is a strength AGT has. This is a strength that we expect will continue to allow us to execute our strategy above and beyond that of our competitors. Our growth and acquisitions over the past years have allowed us to build an enviable asset base that is the fourth component of this strategy. This fourth component is to continue our efforts to increase utilization at all of our facilities. This is expected to come not only from operational efficiencies, but also through expanding the products we handle, such as examining opportunities for processing in existing facilities of soybeans, cereal grains, and oil seeds, and expanding our focus on chickpeas, green peas, flax seeds, and canary seeds. Diversification into new products such as these we expect may allow us to utilize our Canadian facilities more effectively and also to boost our pulse and grain processing utilization in Turkey through origination programs from Russia, Ukraine, Argentina, Canada, and Australia. Finally, we're continuing our efforts to report the segments of our business to give meaningful disclosure to our shareholders in the capital markets globally. As our business has grown and matured, we've been in a better position to share information about our business without losing competitive advantages over our smaller regional competitors and markets around the globe. These initiatives began with disclosure regarding metric tons invoiced and gross profit and EBITDA per metric ton measures. These initiatives on segmented reporting will continue with the unveiling of the segmented reporting that allows us to better communicate our gains in diversifying our business and earnings through a diversification in our origins, products, and markets. We believe it will also allow shareholders and capital markets to better understand this diversification initiative and see the margin gains in the segments that we're achieving them. In conclusion, before we go to questions, we see markets in our business operations returning to a more normalized flow of products in the near term, which has the potential to assist in our estimated return to historical margins and earning levels. There are many catalysts in the market that we believe will assist in this recovery. We're committed to the long-term health and growth of AGT and the opportunities we see before us. We believe as our business normalizes, we'll see a strengthening of shareholder value in the long term. I thank you for your interest in Alliance Grain Traders and assure you management remains very committed to this business. Thank you.
Operator, I think we'll go to the first question.
We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. If you're using a speakerphone, please lift the handset before pressing any keys. In order to accommodate as many callers as possible, one question from each person will be taken. To ask a supplemental question, please press star and one again to rejoin the question queue. If time does not allow for the response to all of the questions, the Alliance Grain Traders Investor Relations Group will follow up after the call. Anyone who has a question may press star and one at this time. Your first question is from Steve Hansen of Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Oh, yes. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Just as a general upfront comment, maybe for my questions, I just wanted to say thanks for the additional disclosure. I know I appreciate it as an analyst, and I'm sure the investors will as well. Just into the questions, Murad, can you maybe talk about the evolution of this ingredient opportunity in pet food and agriculture as it, you know, maybe contrasts versus traditional human consumption markets? But in just specifically looking at terms of speed to market for the ingredient opportunity, and then maybe just a quick comment on the size and breadth of the opportunity and margin potential.
Yeah, I mean, Steve, listen, you know, the Minot, North Dakota investment is about $22 million. That facility is, you know, nearing completion, so we'll expect by end January, February, it to be into commissioning of the fractionization line. So what we're going to be doing in that plant is we're going to be taking peas, lentils, chickpeas, and beans, fava beans in the bean side. We're going to be able to take those. We're going to be able to remove the skin, which is the outer pea or the outer pulse fiber. We're going to be able to purify that fiber for pet food and food applications. We're going to then take the dehulled pulses and mill them to flour. So we're going to be able to sell flours into the different segments. And then we're actually going to take the flours one step further and divide them using mechanical separation technologies into protein, fiber, and starch. So, you know, when we look at the components of the pet food or human food markets, you know, there's a desirous characteristic of the ingredient that they may be looking for. So, you know, in a pet food blend, they may be looking for protein, but they don't want additional fiber because they have fiber in the other products within their blend. Or they may be looking for more fiber because, you know, they're doing a, you know, a later in stage life dog food where they want a fiber boost. So, you know, the reason for the focus on the pet food market and the aquaculture market is, you know, we view that as low-hanging fruit. It's opportunities there where the utilization has started in quite a large volume on the whole pulse side and on the flower side, but there's really no undoing large-scale fractionization in North America today to be able to give these companies the components that they require. So to give you an idea of the size of market, you know, dog food is estimated at 5 million tons per year of meat consumption. Just the dog food segment in the United States. If I look at the pet food market overall, $20 billion spent on pets in the United States market alone. 5 million tons, if I look at a 10% inclusion of non-meat vegetable protein as a meat extender or meat replacement, we're looking at around 500,000 tons of protein. In order to generate 500,000 tons of protein, Canada has to mill 50% of Canada's production of peas just to supply the dog food meat market. And that doesn't take into account any of the other animal feed and pet food markets. Now, Steve, why we like it is the pet food segment is actually, in many cases, even more stringent in terms of food safety and quality standard than even human food. And, you know, one of the reasons for that is pets consume the same food day after day after day from the same bag. And so, you know, there's a heightened awareness on food quality standards because, you know, one large dog food manufacturer said to me once, you know, pets that get sick or die aren't good for my brand. So it was a very common sense thing to say, but it really hit home the requirement for food safety. Now, we're reacting to that, you know, with Gaetan Bourassa's leadership and his team's leadership, we've achieved FCS 22,000 food safety certification in four of our plants in North America, and the Minot, North Dakota plant will be the fifth one. So we see this scaling up quickly. The food, packaged food and ingredients segment that we mentioned as not material. Today, it only contains the Arbella Pasta business. The food ingredient platform will go into that segment. So in 2013, you know, we hope to be in a position to start to report that segment to you separately. So you can start to see the margin profile we expect will be enhanced over the current business model. And it will be in a position to assist us in, you know, raising our overall average margin per ton across our platform. And I think that will have a very material impact on our earnings.
Okay, Henke, it's very helpful. And just one other, if I may, just in terms of characterizing your working capital and debt reduction initiative here, what inning are we in, Matt? Are we in the second inning here, or are we in the eighth inning?
You're in the probably the second or the third inning. I mean, to me, Steve, the key measurable will be to continue to monitor net debt as a percentage of revenue and net debt as a percentage of equity. So we want to ensure that as we grow the book, that we actually are maintaining our debt levels or continuing reduction initiatives. And that will all be achieved through inventory turns, receivable turns, and optimization programs in our distribution. So, you know, this is a focus where the eye will, you know, never is a long time, Steve, but it won't come off the ball ever. And, you know, our focus now is to maintain and reduce debt levels as we continue to grow this company into a multi-billion dollar company.
Very helpful. Thank you.
The next question is from Anoop Prahar of GMP Securities. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Just two questions. First of all, of the Q3 inventory, can you give us a sense how much of that has been already sold? And then secondly, you talked about carryout stocks earlier on in your comments. How much of the current Canadian carryout is made up of product that was taken from the 2010 harvest?
Let me answer from the first question, Anoop. I mean, on the inventory, you know, we estimate that on any given quarter, about 60% of our inventory that would be listed as inventory is already pre-sold. So, you know, the balance 40% would be just in the system, you know, ready for sale or, you know, product that's, I mean, we have a big global platform. So when you're looking at, you know, 40% of the inventory not sold, it's not that big of a number when you're considering 29 factories around the world. So, you know, the big portion of that is already sold off and done. I think what I'm going to do is there's two aspects to your question. The other one was the carry-in stocks and things like that. Gaetan, maybe you can give a comment on our overall, you know, global position and the level we're at today versus how we've been in the past, and then maybe continue on carry-in stocks.
Can you repeat the question on the carry-out, Anoop?
Yeah, I mean, I've been reading various different people's thoughts on the current carry-in positions, and I was just curious to know, of the current Canadian carry-in, I mean, how much of that is comprised of the a product that was harvested in 2010, in other words, a fairly poor quality product?
Well, I guess the biggest one was the off-grade red lentil and green lentil issue, and I would say it's probably down to around 150,000 tons. That would be our best guess at this time. And some of that, you know, as a carry-in that came through, and some of that's already been dealt with in the first 2 months in South India and through milling and feed projects and whatnot.
So 150,000 tons would be, as a percentage, what would that represent?
Well, the carry-in on lentils, for example, is about 750,000 tons, so about 150,000 tons of that.
Okay. Thanks.
And then on our global positions, you know, overall in terms of, you know, you wanted to know about it unsold. Where is our status now?
Unsold.
Like our global position in terms of our global longs and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, we're keeping a very tight position globally. The buyers overseas are hand to mouth, and accordingly, you know, with the credit liquidity problems and whatnot, we're keeping a very tight position.
So most of everything in Anoop right now, if I look at it as a snapshot in time, we're largely sold on our inventory position.
And there's paper behind almost everything.
Yep.
The next question comes from Christine Healy of Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. This is Alex Paladin calling on behalf of Christine Healy. The Canadian September export data that came out yesterday showed lentil exports to the Middle East continue to be weak. I was just hoping you could give us a quick update on how you see demand in that region going into Q4 and 2013.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the way I would characterize it, there's a couple of things that are going to play in here. One is, you know, the conclusion of the holy month of Ramadan is done. The Eid holiday, the follow-on religious festival holiday, concluded the end of October. You know, we believe that the Turkish crop that was harvested in June was average at best. So, you know, as a result of, you know, average at best harvest, you know, we're into traditional import and consumption period for Middle East, North Africa. So October, November, December, January, February, March, April, before Turkey's getting ready for their May-June harvest again, that's our traditional strong export period into that region. So I expect that local stocks have been, you know, pressured enough that we're going to start to see, you know, enhanced quarter four, quarter one shipments into that region. We're seeing flows of some of our products, you know, starting up again. You know, faba bean sales out of Australia have been very strong. And, you know, lentil sales are starting into areas in North Africa. Any other comments, Gates, at all?
No, I think that that's quite accurate. We're starting to see some more inquiries, and a lot of the pricing that people are requesting would be for a January shipment, which makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so that's, you know, the traditional period right now is like, listen, when it's winter, you know, and it's 15 degrees, they eat a lot more lentil soup. So that's really good for consumption, and that's the period we're getting into now.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
The next question is from Sean Pratt of The Western Producer. Please go ahead.
Hi, Murad. I heard that that the pigeon pea crop in India is in dire straits, that it's had some pest issues, and there's some reports that, you know, it may be 25% to 30% yields will be down 25% to 30%. So I'm just wondering what you've heard about the Indian pigeon pea crop and what this means for green and red lentil demand?
I think, Sean, in general, you know, all kinds of reports of adversity within the cropping scenarios in India are out there. And, you know, we look at, you know, starting back, you know, the monsoon deficit in August was measured all the way up to close to 30% deficit, you know, at the time, really affecting crop development into their, you know, October, November harvest season that we're in right now. And, you know, kind of even with the monsoon recovery, you know, we feel that there's challenges in terms of the existing crop, and there will be challenges on the follow-on crops in terms of subsoil moisture for establishment of the crops, especially when we get to the March-April harvest. On the pest side, there's been, you know, media reports about worm infestation that has caused, you know, some significant damage and yield loss, you know, as the worms are affecting the pods and are actually consuming some of the available crop that's there. So, you know, pretty wide-scale reports. There's a differing view, I think, within the trade on how significant that impact is. But, you know, the fact that you start to compound all of these factors, you know, we think that there will be a sustained demand event in India that will last through until, you know, the March of 2014 crop. So for a full year of consumption, we think that the challenges that they're currently under will affect the production. On the other side, you know, when you look at lentil and pea, you know, crops, you've asked that question on how it'll affect. We think in general the lagging prices in lentils, you know, in particular, will lead to a contraction of acres around the world. And, you know, won't just be a Canadian phenomenon. We talk about, you know, contracting acres in Western Canada. But, you know, cereal prices and oilseed prices are high in every geography. So these are global crops, and we think that acreage competition will reduce the amount of lentil acres around the world. But with very substantive carry-in stocks and stocks available in the market, it may be just what the doctor ordered in terms of, you know, a supply contraction scenario to allow for the economics to reset and allow growers to make money on these crops and allow processors like ourselves to improve our margins.
Thank you.
Next question comes from Mark Robinson of Cormark Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. I noticed you, you're disclosing your EBITDA a little different, including what looks like interest income into the top line. Just curious why you're doing, if that is the case, and why you're doing that this time around.
Actually, it's been the same every quarter, Mark. No change. So all the comparative quarters are the same treatment. And interest income for us is a combination of interest on our bank deposits, you know, in emerging markets, but also interest collected from clients in our regular sales program, and part of that on our working capital management has been to ensure that we're collecting for overdue accounts, compensation.
Okay, so let's move on to this segmented trading division. Can you just provide a little bit more clarity on exactly what it is you're doing in that segment? And to the extent you can, comment on how volatile those margins have been historically within that group?
Well, I mean, interestingly, you can see, I mean, these are a couple of platforms that have only been with us for a couple of years because we acquired the Portman's Europe platform 2 years ago and the Advanced Seeds platform a year ago. And I think a very important thing to note in this segment is this is not trading in the you know, traditional definition that people may talk about the fact that we're taking, you know, speculative positions. It's really a merchandising platform whereby we have long established relationships with canning companies, packaging companies, food processing companies, and retailers. And we're actually bringing product into the regions of operation, and we're actually providing warehousing, logistics, delivery, quality management services. So it's really a supply chain management platform. So this would be, you know, for providing navy beans you know, from alternate origins around the world into leading European canners for English breakfast beans. It would be for providing, you know, ground nuts, you know, that are roasted and blanched into the peanut butter markets in southern Africa. You know, we have five packaging lines, Mark, running in our South African, I just about said South Australian, South African platform that are actually supplying 367 supermarkets in southern Africa, you know, including the Woolworths chain in southern Africa, including the Pick and Pay chain in southern Africa. We would package peas, beans, lentils, chickpeas, couscous, bulgur, pre-spiced bulgur blends, you know, that go into their retail packs. So we're providing a packaging service. So these are the type of activities, and the margin volatility, you know, it's been quite a consistent. And if you look at the quarterly data against the nine-month data, they're actually quite similar. So you can see that the quarter has delivered a very consistent result compared to what we've delivered for the year. So it's a segment that will grow for us. It's a segment that will assist us in utilizing our assets around Canada, U.S., Australia, and Turkey. So, you know, there's large-scale initiatives to increase our distribution platforms for bulgur wheat, rice, fava beans, white beans, pinto beans, black beans, chickpeas, you know, so this will be a continued focus on growing that segment. You know, we have sales and trading offices now in the UK, Netherlands, Spain. We have the origination offices in China along with our factory. We have Russia, Rostov-on-the-Don River office open now with, you know, active origination programs in chickpeas, lentils. We have a bird seed distribution business where we're taking canary seeds, millets, sunflower seeds, and other products and providing them as an ingredient to bird food packaging companies in Europe. So these are the type of activities contained within the trading and distribution segment, and I see that segment growing in importance, hence the reason why we wanted to have it separated.
Okay, and it looks like temporarily the pasta business has been put into the processing bucket. The pasta business, I guess, would have a higher margin profile than the traditional processing business. So it's fair to say that those numbers then in the processing, as it relates to margin per ton, are temporarily higher than they otherwise would have been just because pasta's in there?
No, they're temporarily lower because the macroeconomic crisis.
No, but all excluding that.
I don't think I can say that. Mark, starting in 2013, the pasta will be out, and you'll see pulses and grains improving, and you'll see a pasta and food ingredients platform blended.
So let me ask it differently then. Pasta would have a higher margin profile than the traditional processing business.
Yeah, it depends on the quarter. Of course, we had a durum wheat supply issue in Turkey. If you look at the production information we gave you, the production of durum fell from 2.5 million tons estimate last year to 1.7 million this year. So as a result, Turkey is going to be a net importer of durum wheat this year. So I can tell you that the pasta segment was affected this quarter as a result of some short supplies and escalating durum wheat prices.
Okay, fair enough.
I wouldn't agree that this quarter is actually inflated. I think the pasta segment had a struggle quarter, but things have turned around because we, as we mentioned in our disclosure, we're actually importing vessels of durum wheat now, and we're acting as a supply chain manager for a number of our competitors where vessels are being brought in of durum. We'll take half and we'll parcel off the balance to our competitors in the pasta segments. So it's I think that will be rectified for quarter four and quarter one.
Okay, thanks.
The next question is from Robert Winslow of National Bank Financial. Please go ahead.
Good morning.
Morning, Robert.
Just wanted to follow up on what Steve had asked earlier, talking about the pet food and aquaculture opportunities. Are these opportunities for you, in obviously higher margin business sounds like, would they be push or pull opportunities? I'm asking because I'm largely unfamiliar with this market of vegetarian protein displacing meat protein in food products for animals.
Yeah, I think when I use the term low-hanging fruit, Robert, I'm actually saying that in the pet food side, it's a pull. They're pulling it in. They want the product. They need more supply. You know, the supply is not necessarily available. So, you know, there's a lot of whole pulses that are already going into these pet foods, but they're looking for more refined blends because they're, you know, it's interesting, you know, spend some time, Robert, in the dog food or the pet food aisles in the large scale retail, and you'll see a very sophisticated segment that's emerging. You know, gluten-free, you know, blends, lifestyle platforms where you have, you know, everything from puppy chow to geriatric dog food. And the segments are changing where each one of the ingredient profiles are different for each segment of a dog's life. We look at the aquaculture segment and, you know, farm tilapia, you know, tilapia grows from spawn to full-grown fish in about 112 days.
Yep.
So they're looking for high-protein, non-GMO feed with a positive lysine profile. And so we look at that and the food industry and the pet food and aquaculture side. And then, so let me finish there. They're pulling it in. On the food side, so, you know, the large-scale global companies, the Krafts, the Unilevers, the Frito-Lays, the PepsiCos, these types of companies, you know, it's not, I wouldn't say it's a push or a pull. It is a, you know, an acknowledgement by these companies that they have, they're very intrigued and interested in these ingredients. And it's largely being driven by the functionality of protein and their desire for fiber. So the functionality of protein, in order to make what's called a complete protein, grains and rice and, you know, those types have one type of protein, and the pulses have a complementary type of protein. So what we're looking at with those food companies on collaborative product development is complementary protein. So the grain protein and the legume vegetable protein combine to make a digestible and effective protein for their food products. So this was the reason for the laboratory in Saskatoon and the recruitment of two world-renowned scientists, Dr. Mehmet Talbek, who was at North Dakota State University, and Davide Vitali out of Italy, who is a developer of commercialized blends for the food industry globally, including grains and pulses. So those two have been brought together to work collaboratively with food company teams on developing products. Now, what I like about the push and pull going together on the food side is the large-scale food companies are recognizing not only are they interested, they're putting teams together internally, and they're paying for a lot of the research and product development activities.
Oh, that was going to be my next question. We at some point expect a line item to be broken out here called R&D that would be supportive of this initiative in your financial statements?
Yeah, I guess, we have to look at the materiality of that. That's contained within our marketing, sales, and distribution today.
Okay.
And so we would have that in there. And, of course, you know, we're pursuing all kinds, Robert, of offsetting and matching funding programs. We've been very successful with, you know, Canadian government, state North Dakota government, Saskatchewan government funding programs, as well as the food companies contributing cash dollars and team members to IP, so intellectual property, development of ingredient blends that are going to go into their products. That's where we see this initiative rolling out in 13 and 14.
That's very helpful. Thank you.
There is a follow-up question from Steve Hansen of Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Yeah, Murad, this is a follow-up on the pricing issue or the lentil pricing issue that you described earlier. How should we think about the trade-off between higher lentil prices or just pulse prices generally overseas versus the potentially lower volumes that you were speaking to? It sounds like you would expect a margin lift, at least initially, but I'm just getting that trade-off between utilization and pricing.
I think that there's a couple of things here. Like, you know, there's been some comments on the fact that our tons are down. You know, if you compare quarter 3, 11 to quarter 3, 12, I think we have to be clear on one thing, Steve. With the macroeconomic environment that's out there and the working capital and debt reduction initiatives and the fact that this company is managed with our risk management platform is non-negotiable, you know, we have actually scaled back sales programs into certain geographies as a result of, you know, credit liquidity and financial constraints of some importers. You know, for instance, our European sales program into, you know, Greece, Spain, Italy, Portugal, you know, those types of areas, I can tell you we're being very selective on the clients that we are supporting at this point as a result of our concern over, you know, credit and the financial health of some of the importers. So, you know, over time, I think the interaction of price and utilization and margin is, as price increases, it returns a bit more confidence to the importer side. Like, we're hedging our risks off anyway, right? We buy it, we sell it, we hedge the currency, we use a trade finance instrument. We're not large-scale speculators on the commodity price, but what it will do is it will shake it out of the farmer's hands. Farmers are holding tight today because, you know, you could sell your cereals and your oil seeds, right? Why would you sell your lentils at a low price, you know, when you're looking at that type of interaction? Buyers, when the markets are stagnant and deflated, you know, they make their money off of importing and distributing and taking positions on commodities. So we think that price recovery that's coming will lead to more fluidity. More fluidity of demand for us leads in our ability to select geographies that have a more positive margin profile. That's that pull-push that Robert was talking about on the other platform applies to our traditional business too. When we're pushing product into the market, right, margins get constrained. When they're pulling product into the market because there's both demand and positive fundamentals, margins can recover. And we're seeing that already. I mean, you know, I can see with the volumes down slightly, you know, still the positive gross margin and EBITDA improvement combined by margin improvement and cost reduction is a very positive fundamental that we can take away as a building block for quarter four and quarter one of 2013. So we're quite, you know, pleased with that progress.
That's great. That's helpful. And just the last one, if I may, is just on quickly on the credit update or the credit facility update. I know you've been working on more of a global facility. Do you have any timeline on stage of development there?
Yeah, discussions are ongoing. You know, the facility, the current global syndication facility that is led by Scotiabank with HSBC and Rabobank involved in a substantive manner, it expires April 30th of 2013, but it has a plus 1 year term out feature.
Yeah,
and so, you know, with that timing, you know, I would expect resolution within the next, you know, 8 to 12 weeks. So okay. The process is ongoing, and I'm very optimistic that, you know, we're going to get, you know, the consolidation of some global credits done, get them termed out in terms of duration, fix up our emerging markets interest rate side, because interest rates in emerging markets have been escalating. We need to use the strength of the AGT balance sheet to do credit replacement. So we're going to be moving credits up to the AGT level, and we're going to be taking those interest savings, you know, directly into earnings per share.
Care to quantify that at or take a crack at it?
Not at this point, Steve, but you'll start to see it coming up in 2013.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you for the time.
There is a follow-up question from Mark Robinson of Cormark Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Just quickly, so the lentil export figures for the whole quarter were in, and I think you sort of touched on this a little bit. I just want to get a little more clarity. They were up close to 19% for the quarter, and yet your volumes were down year over year 8%. There's usually been a pretty good correlation between your volumes and those lentil export figures. So any reason why there'd be a deviation this quarter? I'm just trying to better understand that.
Well, from the Canadian side, our lentil exports actually were flat to normal market share. I think there's a few things. Our Australian operations maybe were a bit down in volume, as were our Turkish operations, just slightly down in sales. And I think on the lentil side itself, that the number was really big to India. You must have noticed, mm-hmm. I think it was almost 100,000 ton of the 160,000 tons. And there was probably two to five bulk vessels in there type of thing with either a hatch of 5,000 to 10,000 ton at each one that would have boosted the number for that period.
Yeah, so that number maybe won't be necessarily a normal flow. But, you know, Mark, the number being down, I mean, if we look at it, Australia's in their last, you know, the end of their crop. If I look at the 2011 carry-in versus the 2012 carry-in in Australia, they had more product last year in this period than they had this year. So, you know, from that particular perspective, our Australian numbers account for, you know, big part of the reduction.
Yes.
And the Canadian business was actually, you know, quite strong. Now, the good news on that is that, you know, traditionally, you know, the Turkish business is second half, quarter three, quarter four, quarter one, you know, first half of quarter two. That's kind of their three strongest quarters, you know, in that half quarter and half quarter at the ends. And so we saw, you know, good recovery in our Turkish platform at the end of the quarter. Canadian platforms improved, and Australian was down, but Australia in quarter four, we're going to see an improvement again. So, you know, the areas where we were down, it's just a seasonal thing. We'll be back up. And then also, I said the selectivity, you know, listen, we will not compromise our risk management program to go after short-term sales in markets and areas where we see there being undue, you know, credit risk. So over time, some of our competitors may be keeping with their payment terms that they were doing before. We're tightening them up. You know, we're not allowing, you know, full cash against documents in certain markets. We're saying 20% cash advance, balance cash against documents. If you don't like it, go buy from our competitor. But you know what? Sooner or later, they're going to be back at our door, you know, asking to buy product on our terms, and we're seeing that happening.
Okay, thanks.
And that brings us to the end of our questions in the session. I'd like to thank everyone for joining us. I'd like to remind everyone that's still on the call, if you have any follow-up questions, you can feel free to contact us at our Regina head office. We'd be more than happy to follow up with you. As well, I'd just like to make one more note. AGT is planning an investor tour and a visit to our facilities in Mersin and Edirne in Turkey at the end of November. It's quite tight from a timing standpoint now, but if you are interested in participating, please do feel free to contact us at our office, and we'll discuss it as soon as possible. So again, thank you for attending our conference call, and I wish you all a good day.